First of all, good morning. I want to be very clear that this is not a spiritual or a religious gathering, even though you might want to call it that or put it into that category. And if you must, you can. Of course, you're all entirely free to do as you will. However, what we're here to talk about, if it is to be put in any category, it would be the category of being human. If we put it in any other category, we limit it to all kinds of extremes that exist within that category. So if we start to talk about things like awakening, enlightenment, liberation, self-realization, and we put it into a category called spiritual or religious, we immediately limit it to extremes or points of view that exist within those categories. In other words, all the descriptions about it will exist within those categories of being spiritual and religious. And thus, the separation, the fragmentation that occurs to dualistic perception will just occur in another way. So what we really have is an anomaly of dualistic perception called spirituality and religion. And, you know, this is all as it is. Throughout human time and throughout time altogether, there have been ways of describing the pinnacle experience of being human. And during a lot of the time that human beings have been around, those ways of describing who we are as awake or exalted beings or whatever have been spiritual or religious. All I'm saying here is that it is not necessary to delimit them as spiritual and religious. And if it is delimited as being spiritual and religious, it's very likely that there will be extremes adopted. In other words, that there will be certain kinds of behavior that will be kept in place, certain kinds of thoughts that will need to be kept in place, certain kinds of emotional states that will be kept in place in order for this realization to come about. But if we look into this with just a little bit of discernment, what we can see very readily is that awareness is naturally present. Awareness is naturally present, and that awareness is the basic space of everything. So if we look at it in just this simple way, that awareness is naturally present, this is something every human being can relate to. And if we say awareness is the basic space of everything, that's something else every human being can relate to. Every human being can say, yes, I experience space. Yes, I experience awareness. Well, those two realizations, the direct experience of awareness and then the experience of basic space, aware basic space, is what self-realization is. And within that, all is contained. All is contained. Any point of view whatsoever is contained. Whether it's spiritual, religious, philosophical, psychological, bread baking, you know, whatever it is. All points of view, no matter what they are aware basic space and nothing else. Just as pure space is entirely uncompounded, infinite and forever existing, so too we are forever uncompounded and existing. Any point of view we have about ourselves, anything we've taken ourselves to be, is simply a point of view of that aware basic space, included within that space, and nothing else. So all of these other terms we've learned to describe who we are, they, of course, are descriptions of who we are, but sometimes they're far too limiting, especially today. Because today, more than ever, we as human beings have a mandate upon ourselves. And that mandate that we have upon ourselves is for all of us to come together as a global human culture, for all of us to stand up for this simple reality of who we are, and for us to tap into the omniscience, the all-knowing wisdom that is the essence of aware basic space to solve the problems of our world. And if we keep talking about ourselves as divided up into all these categories, that can never take place. So, you know, the language that we use in the Great Freedom Teaching is very significant, and it came about very purposefully. It appeared in this way in a very purposeful way. The way in which things described here, it's stripped naked. You know, everything is stripped naked. There's only the great reality of who we are and nothing else. There's nothing else that needs to be used to describe it. If we want to continue to have our favorite things to do, that's great. You know, if we have a guru we love, if we do all kinds of spiritual practices we love, all that's great, but none of that leads to the attainment of self-realization unless we're resting naturally as awareness, as aware basic space, while we're involved in all those practices. Without this direct experience, this direct realization of who we are that's specific to freedom in each perception, I'll say that again, because I noticed some people were distracted. Without this specific direct experience, direct realization of the freedom that is the essence of every single perception, no matter what its label, its quality, or its characteristic, without freedom in that immediate perception of whatever perception arises, there is no freedom. If there isn't freedom in every perception, there is no freedom. If there is not freedom in every perception, then there's some idea about freedom. There's some kind of extreme that's been adopted about what freedom is. Does everyone understand what I'm saying? So, you know, especially today when for the first time in human history we have more books and information about available about awakening than have ever been. Almost every human being today has a wealth of information available about what awakening is. So many of us, we've read all these books and we just end up in a state of confusion, and we end up with a lot of terms to describe the reality of what we are, but very often we don't have the direct experience of that. And we go to certain groups, and like I received a letter from one woman, and she said that she had a very profound awakening at the end of a retreat, a certain kind of Buddhist retreat that she did. And she went to her teacher and said, "I've had this incredible awakening." She did this after a couple weeks. She said, "I've really realized the essence of who I am. I've realized the essence of awareness." And the teacher said, "Oh no, it's not possible for a new student to do that. It takes years of practice." Well, you know, the starting point for the realization of who we are is that we already are who we are. So if we wanted to have the proper motivation or the proper acknowledgement of what we are, it would be that everyone is already awake, everyone is already enlightened, this is our natural state, and because it is our natural state and it belongs to everyone, that means me too. Do you see what I mean? So this is the starting point. We're not talking about something that is for the elect. If we start to talk about our natural state as something that's for the elect, immediately we're talking about duality. Either everyone is included or no one is included. Do you understand what I'm saying? So you see, with just a little bit of discernment, we really need to look into these things for ourselves. Don't even bank on what I'm saying. You know, just look into it for yourself. Look into your own direct experience. What do you realize to be true about yourself? What is your direct experience of yourself that comes first before all else? What is primal in every single experience you have? What is the essence of every single experience you have? I can tell you what it is, but you're going to need to directly experience it in order to realize it. The essence of every single experience, every single perception, every single point of view is awareness. And that awareness can be called by many names, but the direct experience of it in a human being is most easily described as awareness. Over time, it's been called all kinds of things: Brahman, the Absolute, God, Krishna consciousness, whatever it is. You can have your favorite term. It's okay, but it's all awareness. Whenever we talk about any of these terms as the Absolute, we're talking about awareness, because even if we have one of these terms that we love, like Krishna consciousness or whatever it is, awareness is primal in that. Awareness is the essence of it. The term Krishna consciousness, that description would not occur without awareness of that label. So all the words that are in the dictionary, and even all the words that aren't in the dictionary, because maybe Krishna consciousness isn't in the dictionary, or some of these other terms or phrases like I am the Absolute, those may not be in a dictionary or in a book of phraseology. But no matter what these terms or descriptions are, the commonality in each of them is awareness. So, you know, when what we talk about in the Great Freedom Teaching is to approach this epitome matter of who we are, this pinnacle reality of who we are, in one of two ways. One is either just showing up here and conviction will gradually dawn, or maybe it will dawn right away. You know, there's no one way it has to be. It could be suddenly, it could be gradually, it just is whatever it is. Don't compare yourself to anyone else. And the other approach is to rest naturally without seeking anything. To rest naturally for short moments repeated many times. And in resting naturally as awareness for short moments repeated many times, it becomes automatic. So it's as simple as that. It's very straightforward. There is nowhere to get to. The essence of awareness is that it is unborn by nature. It's completely uncompounded, like the sun. You know, the sun is completely uncompounded. It doesn't have a lot of bits and pieces in it. It's all blazing light. Pure space is entirely uncompounded. It's an infinite vast expanse. So too is our nature. Our true nature is the vast expanse of infinite basic space. A vast expanse that is pure space, just as the sky is pure space. And all the points of view that occur within that aware basic space are that space and nothing else. They're inseparable from that space, like the color blue is inseparable from the sky. So each point of view, no matter what it is like the flight path of a bird in the sky. It vanishes naturally, leaving no trace. It's like a line drawn in water. No matter how many lines we draw in water, they completely disappear without a trace. And so all points of view that arise within the aware basic space of our awareness are like a mirage and nothing else. Even if we took a mirage of anything at all, say it was an oasis in the desert, and it had all of these elements, it had a water well and chairs to sit in and beautiful glasses to drink out of and people running around to wait on us and provide us with all kinds of comforts and quench our thirst. No matter how many elements there were in that mirage, if we tried to grab onto them, there'd be nothing but pure space. And such is the nature of all points of view. All points of view, no matter what they are uncompounded. They are aware basic space and nothing else. And not a basic space that has ever been limited by anything, but rather a basic space that is the vast expanse of pure space, like the infinite sky. So when we start to talk about ourselves in this way, usually, even if we've never heard this before, it has a ring of truth. We can hear the bell pealing. Oh yeah, this sounds right. Even if we've heard it described in many other ways, we may be thinking, yeah, this is a little bit different. It's more basic. I can understand it. So the direct reality of who we are, because it is our true nature or natural state, it is simple, but it's also not overly simple. And it's definitely not overly complicated. So you see, if we look at who we are, and from either of these streams, oversimplified or overcomplicated, then we're going to get involved in all kinds of points of view about who we are. But if we just rest naturally, rest freely as the essence of every perception, then we realize the only realization there is to have, and that is that we already are basic space, aware basic space, and nothing else. Just because we've been exposed to points of view throughout our lives where we hear over and over again, you're somebody, your name is such and such, you have a history of doing these kinds of things, having these kinds of thoughts, having these kinds of emotional states, and that's your identity, this accumulation of your thoughts and feelings and conduct. And yes, there's space all right in the universe, but it's out there, you know, it's separate from you. You're a subject, and all of that out there is an object that you are perceiving as a subject. And then there are all kinds of complex ways of describing who we are as individual human beings, that we have a biology and a physiology, and that we have consciousness, and that consciousness comes about through complex mechanisms of neurology and physiology and all of these other things all compiled together. So you see, we learn all of these points of view about who we are, but once we hear that we are this aware basic space that includes the idea of a personal identity, that includes the point of view of a body, that includes the point of view of a mind, and that all these points of view, no matter what they are equal, then we suddenly feel a great relief, because we're no longer striving in every single moment to make sense out of everything, to try to create meaning out of everything. How could meaning ever be created out of a mirage? Wherever there's only pure space, there's nothing to grab onto. And all points of view are like that. Sometimes I liken them to a greased pig. In the U.S., we have these things at the fairs, the country fairs, called grease pig contests. And the contest is that people try to hold on to a greased pig. Well, you know, there's no way to hold on to a greased pig. Have you ever tried it? No, but everyone can imagine it, you know, no matter how much we pour the grease all over the pig, and then it runs around and we try to grab it. Well, we can't. And so, you know, all our points of view are like that. If we try to make them into something and hold on to them, we never really can. We never can, no matter how hard we try. So the pivotal instruction here is just to relax, to be totally at ease in each perception, as each perception, and as we do so, it becomes more and more obvious who we are. When we look to our points of view to solve our problems, we're looking for solutions to our problems in a mirage. You know, just as we're not going to find a drink of water in the mirage of an oasis, so too we're not going to find any solution to any of our problems in our points of view. All of the great solutions of true wisdom to all the problems that ever were arise as an emanation of benefit from this basic space. And this is the way it has always been. We'll never be able to find permanent solutions to any kind of problem whatsoever in points of view. To look to points of our points of view about everything that's going on to solve our problems is like trying to get a drink of water in a mirage. We'll never be able to get it, no matter how hard we try. Or, you know, say we hear an echo, and it seems like the sound is way over there in the valley. Well, no matter, we could run after that echo, we could search high and low for where that sound came from, and we'd never hear it. Because an echo is nothing but pure space. Nothing but pure space. So too, we can't find solutions to any of our problems. Not about our own identity or anything else in our points of view. And you know, when we look into this matter of personal identity, this too we can apply very elementary discernment to the matter of personal identity. And just see, you know, each of us here, if we can find a personal identity anywhere within us. If we can really find a personal identity anywhere within us. There's Ravi. We'll take Ravi as an example today. We'll look for Ravi's personal identity. Ravi's sitting right over here at the end of the second row. We're going to examine his personal identity and see if he has one. We're also going to call in all the experts from all over the world. They're going to come here too, and they're going to try to find Raviness in Ravi. But you know, if we look at Ravi, we can completely deconstruct Ravi, and we can look at everything about him, everything, all the points of view that we've learned that make someone into what they are, that make someone into a personal identity. So we can look at each one of those things and see if we can find Raviness there. We can look at his hair and his brain and his heart. The brain and the heart are considered to be very important organs. We can look at the skin. We can look into the essence of the skin and the skeletal structure. We can look at every single cell of Ravi's body. We can look at the blood coursing through his veins. But all of these things, when we look in there, we can't find Raviness in there anywhere. All we found are a bunch of labels, mirage-like labels that are somehow assumptions about who Ravi is. And then we could take Ravi. Today, you see, it's really possible to inquire deeply into Ravi. We could take Ravi and we could bring in an enormous electron microscope, and we could put Ravi, his whole body, under the electron microscope. And all we'd see are all these subatomic particles that look exactly alike. And we could bring in everyone. We could bring in Ravi's mother and father, and neither one of them would say, "Oh, that's Ravi." So no matter how far we go, then if we took all of these subatomic particles and threw them in a linear accelerator and they were smashed beyond any kind of physical recognition whatsoever, and there was only sound and light, we still wouldn't find Raviness there. We wouldn't find Raviness anywhere, because what is constant in all these experiences of attempting to find the personal identity of Ravi is awareness. Awareness of Ravi, awareness of Raviness, awareness of each of the elements that may make up Ravi. Awareness of all the subatomic particles, awareness of all of these points of view, no matter what they are, naturally occurring, spontaneously occurring within basic space. So you see, this is a very simple reality of who we are. A very simple reality of who we are. And I'm not in any way suggesting anything here like voidness or an inert void or anything like that. Who we are is so rich with wisdom and compassion, but this wisdom and compassion of aware basic space is also naturally occurring. It's inherent. It does not need to be developed or cultivated. It's naturally occurring, and everyone who realizes more and more the essence of their awareness, everyone who does so, it's like flipping a light switch on. All of a sudden, wisdom and compassion are naturally present. Everything that needs to be known is known. All kinds of solutions to problems that seemed insoluble are known. The compassion and love we've always wished we had and tried to cultivate and developed are naturally occurring. They're innate, they're inherent. It's just like we don't need to make our eyes brown or convince ourselves that our eyes are blue. They already are whatever color they are. And so too, our wisdom and compassion is inherent. The aware basic space that is our reality, its only emanation is benefit and nothing else. Everything that occurs within its space is wholly positive. A wholly positive, single, blissful expanse of equalness and evenness, forever uncompounded. All points of view, no matter what their label, are equal. All our thoughts are pure space. All our emotional states are pure space. All of our conduct, no matter what it is pure space. Sometimes it seems like, well, it couldn't be that way. You know, we have to be good people, and we have to say, well, this is good and that's bad. But, when we realize that wholly positive basic space is the essence of every perception, it isn't like being given a license to be irresponsible or immoral. We find this is the source of true compassion, and we find the source of true compassion when we realize that everything about ourselves, no matter what it is, past, present, or future, is aware basic space and nothing else. And when we realize that about ourselves, we instantaneously realize it about everything and everyone. So rather than realizing that all points of view, no matter what they are aware basic space and nothing else, rather than that being a license to do whatever we will, instead what it is the door that opens this incredible wisdom and compassion that's already present. So, you know, when we talk about freedom, this is true freedom. It's freedom that has no extreme or division. Freedom that doesn't need to be called anything. Timeless freedom that applies equally to everyone. No hierarchies or systems of elect beings. No special categories or behaviors that are required. You know, some people may like to participate in certain kinds of things like yoga or pujas or meditation or whatever it is. That's great. But unless we're resting freely in each perception while we're doing those things, they can't possibly lead to freedom. But you know, too, there are many people who aren't interested at all in those kinds of things. So why should freedom be kept from ones who are not interested in that? So you see, today we have a way of describing this reality of who we are that includes everyone. And this makes sense, doesn't it? That it be a description, a way of putting this very significant and important matter into language that everyone can understand. But at the same time, not oversimplifying it, and thereby diminishing its potency. But if we overcomplicate it too, we diminish its potency. If we either oversimplify or overcomplicate, then right away the fewer people are going to realize who they are, because there are more descriptions, more and more descriptions. Just know that every point of view, no matter what it is, that arises within the basic space of your awareness, it is awareness and nothing else. It is the basic space of awareness and nothing else, no matter its description or label.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Uh-huh. What happens, you said there's no void and no... I'm really feeling like I'm understanding more, you know, what you're saying, just by experience, just by sitting here and leaving and feeling some of this, these wise things that you're telling us to look at. But what happens? Awareness is awareness. In everything, but with perception. But what happens when we don't perceive anymore, and awareness and perception are not working together anymore, or doing whatever, right? No awareness of perception, like as in death, so to speak, but we're no longer perceivers, humans. What goes on with the awareness in that sense?
Well, first of all, there is no human perceiver. There's no perceiver and perceived. There's awareness only as whatever is occurring. So awareness doesn't come together with points of view and then separate from them. Awareness is the point of view only and nothing else. As for the matter of the point of view of death, when we train ourselves, so to speak, to be free as the awareness of every perception, then we're completely prepared for the perception of death. See, if we adopt any kind of extreme or description about what awakening is or freedom is, we may have a perception that arises that we're not able to deal with because we've adopted some kind of idea about what freedom is. But when we rest freely and naturally as the awareness that is the only basic space of every perception, then no matter what the perception is that arises, we're prepared for it. And we're especially prepared for our death. Because by the time we reach our death, we have realized this awareness and we are the awareness without trying to be it. Do you see what I mean? We don't need to rest naturally or anything else. It's fully evident that we are who we are, that everything is the basic space of awareness and nothing else. And when the perception of death comes, we simply resolve entirely into basic space. So the point of view of the body resolves in basic space, the basic space of awareness. Does that answer your question? There's nothing to be afraid of. And, you know, there's no getting out of awareness. There's no getting out of it. And there's no escape hatch, no way out. Any point of view, no matter what it is awareness and nothing else. So usually, my experience with people over the last 24 years is that first people realize that all these points of view, no matter what they are included within their own awareness. And then that realization becomes more and more evident. And as it does so, the point of view of I weakens, so to speak, of there being a personal identity, that it just naturally fades away. It's not like some of these descriptions we hear that sound so horrible, like annihilation of I or whatever it is. It's more like it just fades away naturally, and like, oh yes, I took myself to be a personal identity, isn't that amusing? And you know, it naturally fades away, and as it does so, more and more, there's just a very natural, easeful realization that everything is basic space and nothing else. So what starts out as this realization of all points of view being included within awareness, it just naturally resolves in the realization of basic space, as of oneself as wholly positive basic space. And you know, with nothing going on, it's just so clear that it can be described in many ways. For example, complete purity in the moment, or whatever it is. There's just this basic spaciousness that is the reality of everything. And no need to get a death grip on a point of view and try to make it into something.
So what's left beneath that basic space? What is there in that basic space?
Basic space, that's it. Just space. Aware basic space. Awareness and basic space are inseparable.
Mm-hmm. Is there something that provides a basic space, or?
Basic space is uncreated, unborn, unconditioned. It has no origin.
It's just there. It is by happenstance.
It is.
Uncreated.
Uh-huh.
So if it's there, then it can't be uncreated. It has to be created. No. I'm sorry. Is it okay if I ask questions?
Oh, sure. Ask any question you want.
I don't want to be rude. I'm just confused because there's
okay, well, let's take this out of the area of questioning about it and relate it to your own direct experience. Can you imagine yourself not existing?
No.
Can you imagine space not existing?
Yes.
How can you imagine space not existing?
Well, if you think back before time, before Big Bang, so to speak, and sort of thing, if you think back, there was no space, no time, no space.
There was.
Isn't that what Stephen Hawking said?
There was basic space. Stephen Hawking is a scientist who talks about a lot of points of view. That's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about scientific speculation. To scientifically speculate about something is to adopt an extreme of needing to describe something with characteristics. So everything that is, say, all of Stephen Hawking's realizations, all of Einstein's, all of the realizations of quantum physics, all of the realizations of humankind throughout all of time that have existed into the very distant past, that exist now and that are far flung out into the future, all arise within basic space. And that basic space is timeless and without dimension. So it isn't dimensional space. And you know, any of these things, if we look into it, like Stephen Hawking's or whatever great scientific minds might be available today, people we can talk to, books we can read and that sort of thing, 200 years from now, people will think that that was primitive. You know, so when we look into this matter of our own points of view, we have to realize this about them, that they are like a mirage, that they're always changing, but the space within which they occur never changes. The holy positive basic space is the reality of your identity. It's the reality. If you were said to have a personal identity, that would be it.
Can you tell me what that is? What is the essence of that basic space?
That is the essence of it, basic space. Right now,
the essence of basic space is basic space.
That's right.
And it's uncreated.
And it's uncreated.
Oh, that makes absolutely no sense.
Well, you have to directly experience it. You can't intellectually speculate about it. It can't be understood intellectually. Well, yeah, it's really important to come out of your points of view about either agreeing or disagreeing and directly experience your own awareness that is the root of every single perception you're having and everything you're saying. So directly experience your own awareness. Just rest there with your own awareness. Rest as the awareness that is the essence of your ability to know you're naturally present, of your ability to know that you have a bunch of questions or an intellect or anything else. Your awareness is the root of each one of those experiences. Can't be denied by anyone on the face of the earth. It's the most elemental of all intellectual understandings. And then just quietly, without getting into all the elaboration and speculation of what everything is, allow your awareness to mingle with the vast expanse of infinite space. Allow yourself to just go beyond any idea of whatever you've speculated yourself to be.
So if I go into this space and I let go of all of my ideas and concepts and opinions and everything, I will only find basic space, nothing inside of that basic space. That's it. I'm made up of basic space. This is so depressing to me. I can't help it.
Do I look depressed? Find out.
I'll jump in the gun because at least I'll find fish there.
Find out for yourself. This is what I suggest to you. Find out for yourself instead. Contempt prior to investigation is a very limited point of view. Contempt prior to investigation. So before you throw yourself in the Ganga, go sit on a bench for 15 minutes and look into the sky and allow your awareness to mingle with the vast expanse of infinite space and see whether you like it or not.
I love it. I absolutely love it. That's why I think there's something inside of that basic space or a provider of that basic space.
Well, for a while you may think there is something within that basic space. You may think that all these points of view are within this basic space, or there are all kinds of subjects and objects within that basic space. But the more that you just rest easefully as the essence of every perception, in other words, awareness is the essence of every perception, if you can't go the basic space route and that's too much for you to handle right now, just rely on your own awareness. Rely on your own awareness.
When you go into your basic space, is there a feeling that you get when you're personally in this basic space?
I don't go into any basic space, nor do I go out of it, nor do I dwell in it.
You just float.
No, I don't float either.
You don't exist.
I don't either exist or not exist. I don't adopt any extremes.
Who are you? So you don't
find out for yourself. I can tell you all kinds of things about who I am. I can blab on and on forever about who I am, but that's not what I'm doing here. No, I'm here in order to introduce people to the direct realization of their true nature. For people who want to do that.
For direct realization of their true nature.
Of their true nature.
Creation. basic space, which includes nothing.
No, I didn't. No, I did not say that it includes nothing. I suggest that you just rest as awareness for a while and get acquainted with your own awareness. And then once you are acquainted, then ask more questions.
Okay, I just have one suggestion for you, with all due respect. Are you familiar with Swami Muktananda? He teaches at Divine Life Society.
Uh-huh.
He teaches before your class, and I'm not saying this for your students, I'm saying for you. You may want to sit in on his class before you teach yours. And I mean it really sincerely, respectfully.
I'm very familiar with Swami Muktananda and everything he teaches. You know, to each their own. Whatever your choice is, go for it.
I just think if you're teaching the essence of something, you should know what that essence is before you tell other people what the essence is. That's just my idea. Not even my idea. If you're teaching the essence of something, there has to be something that is the essence of the essence, no? Anyway, have a nice day.
I think you should wait and hear what some other people have to say. You know, I'm not a philosopher. I think you should hear the direct experience of other people in this room before you enter into these extremes of argumentation, debate, comparison. You know, this is what I call the fight and bite mentality of point of view. It's a complete avoidance of relationship with everyone and everything due to complete immersion in points of view. So would someone like to come up here and talk about their direct experience?
Sorry. I was you, and I was really cynical. extremely cynical, and before I came here, I did lots and lots of reading, everything I could get my hands on, and I sort of got a perverse comfort in what I think you've assumed is believing in the void, because, I don't know, like for example this morning, I've been my whole adult life plagued by mild depression. And that's continued to be here since coming to see Candice. This morning it was really prevalent. But all the while, behind that is just this calm, and that I could never get from reading or seeing anyone else. I mean, and. But I've got this point of view that I've been pinning on it. Sorry, this is that is another extreme where I find it literally impossible to get out of bed at any time, even during the day. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. I'm just going round and round in circles. But underneath everything, if that's basic space, I don't know. I've got no idea what I'm saying anymore, but there's a calmness there that wasn't there before, that is there whether I'm disagreeing with what Candice is saying or I'm in the midst of depression and I can't get out of bed. I think I've only just realised that. I sort of self-analysed my way into that. But no, I needed a dump truck to unload my head of all the concepts I had. Except I didn't need one because they just all disappeared into...
Relief.
Yeah, and I realise now that I still feel quite depressed, but... Yeah. So I'm going to sit down.
Juliana.
We did the one day introduction thing yesterday. I've been coming to satsangs with Candice for the last couple of weeks, And I'm very familiar with Swami Muktananda as well. We spent a lot of time there. And what he's describing, the essence of what he's describing is exactly the same experience of this basic space. But the difference is in the language. We were talking about language and the way the language of this teaching is so specifically geared towards each individual directly experiencing what that is. And after the introduction yesterday, I had an experience last night that continued through into this morning, and it kind of explained itself in an analogy which I think is quite kind of apt to describe this thing that we're trying to talk about. And yesterday Heather mentioned that we were talking about emotions and emotional disturbance and thoughts, and she was saying that yesterday morning there's a wind howling down the valley, and that tonight the wind will probably be there again, but right now there's no wind. So I had this experience, and it felt like everything that I take myself to be is like a whirlwind. It's like a twister. And it's so apparent. It's so apparently there. And it's so the focus of all my attention, because all these points of view and all these concepts are held in place, and they're spinning around like this. But if you look to the centre of that twister, there's absolutely nothing there. It's just twisting round, and all the debris, all the everything is just twisting round and round. And then in a split instant, the wind stops, and the centre of the twister becomes exactly the same as all the space around it. It's just all the opinions that are held together by this force that doesn't exist just falls away, and there's nothing there. And all the points of view are still there, all the debris is still scattered around, and occasionally the wind will come again and it'll pick them all up and blow them, but they just blow through. And without this force of the twister holding them like this, there's no centre anymore. There's no personal identity. Do you see what I mean? All there is in the centre of that is space. Mm-hmm. And that experience, all of a sudden, I just felt there was just no one there. There was no one in there anymore. All there was space. Mm-hmm. And the awareness of all the concepts and all the everything else was still there. The ability to think, all of this was still there. Mm-hmm. But without the illusion holding it all together, all the essence of my being was just space. Mm-hmm. Everything, inside, outside, complete calm, just space, but aware space, that's all it is.
Okay. Can I ask you one question? When you saw this space, did you feel something?
There's just an experience of it. Any sensation, any perception, any thought, anything is part of the debris. It's a point of view. Not a point of view just like a mental opinion, but a point of view being an experience, a perception of anything. Anything you perceive, sensation, anything. And it's all an experience that is just held together by this whirling thing that doesn't exist. There's nothing in the centre of it. Mm. And as soon as the wind stops, you see that there's nothing in the middle. Mm. It's just nothing. They all exist still, but they're not held together by the illusion of a personal identity. That's just vast spaciousness. Mm. Really.
Thank you, Julian. Thank you. You know, I'd like to just share something too about my own direct experience of how this came about for me. 24 years ago, I was a young woman in America, and I was a young woman of significant accomplishment. I'd been named one of the outstanding young women in America. I had two beautiful children, a husband, everything anyone could ever hope to have, well-educated, contributing a great deal to my community, not only locally, but nationally and internationally. And by the time I was 28 years old, I I was in New York City, and I suddenly realized, what do I do for an encore? You know, what do I do for an encore? I've accomplished all of these things, but yet there's something missing. You know, there's really something missing. And when I realized that there was something missing, I started to have many, many, many thoughts and feelings about the existential nature of reality, psychology, all kinds of other philosophy, all the different ways I tried to make sense of things, all my exploring of different things to try to make me happy, like a good relationship with my mother and father, my brothers and sisters, contributing to society, having a wonderful husband, having beautiful children, having all these things, being a person of great accomplishment. And I was trying to see how all these fit together and could make sense in terms of being an entity called satisfaction. And I couldn't really find any kind of substantive satisfaction in any of that. It was all fine. It was all okay. It wasn't harming anyone, certainly. But I felt there was something missing. I felt there was something missing. And all of these thoughts and emotional states, they kept getting more and more high-pitched. And I felt more and more hopeless and powerless. I thought, well, you know, all these things that I've been trying to do that I thought would lead to satisfaction and fulfillment, that I thought would lead to some kind of personal identity called adulthood, that they just hadn't arrived at that. You know, I still didn't feel like an adult, and I still didn't feel like I had found the essence of satisfaction and fulfillment. So as I had this great proliferation and resolution of all these points of view coming up, I suddenly realized that they all had a source or an origin. And that source or origin of all these points of view, no matter what they were, was the same source and origin. In other words, not one single one of these points of view had an independent nature or origin that was outside this initial source or origin. And I didn't even know what to call it. I'd never been to any meetings like this. I didn't even know that enlightenment was something that applied to me, or that it was something anyone was realizing for that matter. I really didn't even know what it was. I just knew that when I rested naturally as the source or origin of all these points of view, I felt complete relief, complete and total relief. And it wasn't that I was separating out from everything going on. It was that this relief is the essence of every single point of view, no matter what it is, just as Julian described. And as that occurred, something incredible happened. I was naturally nice, without efforting to do so. Without trying to be a good person, I found the essence of goodness in this relief. I didn't even know what to call it. And as I just rested as that, all of my actions became naturally compassionate. And in each moment, each perception, I had an unerring wisdom that was rich with tenderness and completeness. A knowingness that was completely spontaneous, that could never be found in a book or on the internet. And after 10 days of that, suddenly that was it. You know, I realized that that is who I am and that is who I've always been. And with that, for me, occurred something totally miraculous, so potent and powerful, and such incredible evidence of the total deliciousness of this basic space called relief or awareness or whatever you want to call it, that I could suddenly, even though I had no background whatsoever in studying any kind of religious or spiritual text, I could pick up any religious or spiritual text in the world, no matter how esoteric, and I could read it and the first time understand every single thing that was in it and give a discourse on it. So this is what I mean about naturally occurring wisdom that is beyond any kind of intellectual speculation. It's completely beyond any point of view because it's the source, the substance, the totality, the entirety, the tenderness, the deliciousness, the loveness, the all-completeness, the all-perfectness from which everything arises. So this is what I'm suggesting to you in terms of getting acquainted with your own awareness. That just in that awareness is everything.
I agree with everything you're saying, the qualities, everything you described. The only problem I have is that you were talking about basic space being uncreated, no source, nothing. I just think, I know, there's a source of it. That's I don't know if it's semantics that you're leaving out a word or God or something, but there's a source, and you can chuckle or snort or whatever mm-hmm. you're doing over there. There is a source of it. Mm-hmm. And it's not just space that, like, there's nothing there and you're flying around.
Okay, I think for now it's time for you to be quiet and give other people a chance to share. Uh-huh.
I was not chuckling or snorting on you yourself, but just that intellectual sickness that is there to say God created the world. I had once an experience or whatever, I was in India many years ago and I was meditating on Mahara and then came to me, why are the trees green? Why is trees green? And you know, the answer came, the green trees green because it is green. This is the answer. You don't accept it. Go on with your sickness. You know, I'm just saying.
All right.
Yeah.
That's all. Joanna, would you like to come up? Wild and woolly today. Wild and woolly.
I used to, when I was younger, lay in bed and before I went to sleep, I had such a nice comfortable bed wherever I was, and my mom or my dad would tuck it in and it would just feel really safe and cozy. And I always liked to have the door closed and all the lights turned off because it would be really dark and then I couldn't see anything. But it always felt really safe, and like in the daytime it's kind of like you have to see this and you have to see that, like there's a wall or a person or a flower, and then you just see that because you can see it. But then in the nighttime when it was dark, you could just see so much more, like there wasn't such a pronounced limit as there is in the daytime. So then I would be lying there and thinking about whatever I was thinking about, but I remember one, sometimes I would think, try to imagine if I was flying outside of the bed and then flying outside of the house and then flying up into the sky and then flying out of the force of the earth and flying past the other planets and outside of this particular galaxy and then past the other galaxies and then keep going and keep going and keep going. And then I would start to remember that, okay, I'm going to keep going and keep going and keep going, and then where is it going to stop? Is it, am I going to ever be able to go outside of all of the galaxies and outside of all of the universes? And if I go outside of all those galaxies and universes, then what's going to be there? Is there going to be darkness? Well, if there's darkness, then that's darkness. That's something. And if there's not going to be, and if there's lightness, then there'll be a sun, and then there's a something else containing that. And then, so if the farther and farther I went, then I could never get to the outside. You could never see an outside. And all of a sudden, when I thought about that or realized that, it was just pop, and then you could realize that nothing's accountable. There's no something looking down at it, and there's nothing outside of it. There's nothing that's saying that there's that it has to be this way or it has to be that way. And I all of a sudden felt so free, I guess, because in school or whatever, there's something that's you have to do things a particular way, or but then why? Because if I fly outside of the universe, then it doesn't matter what I do. I can do whatever I want to do because there's no spot for it to come from. And there's nothing I can do wrong that's going to take that away. There's nothing that's going to give it or take it or make it or not make it, because I don't know. I guess it's hard to say in words, but it's there's just nowhere to go. I guess that's my understanding of basic space.
Thank you. Vanna Molly.
I'm wondering whether I have to share a story with you patients, which has something to do with the space problem. The guru asks his disciple to go and he's come there to learn about reality. Mm-hmm. And he goes, tells him to go and get the seed of a banyan tree. Mm-hmm. And he brings him. I mean, you've seen the seed of a banyan tree as small as a mustard seed. And he says, break that open, he says. He takes out the skin. And he says, this is something to it. So he had break that again, and he broke that again, and he said, well, break that again and see what's in there. And he broke it, and he said, there's nothing, it's only space. So the Buddha tells him, well, that space which you can't see is a reality of the banyan tree, and that's what makes this huge tree. Without that space, the seed can't live, the parts of the seed cannot produce this tree. And he said, that the art of those great people. That the mercy of the great people. That's when he was joining the
community.
That the art. That's when the great Mahavakya is the ocean. Because that space which you can't see is the essence of this enormous banyan tree. And that the art. You also are that.
So you are that. Hmm? Yes.
It's pretty simple for me. I'm leaving and I'm very sad to leave, but I just want to share because it was just a kind of a thing that happened here with you when you were talking. For me, the only thing I know that works in a sense is experience, because I've read a lot and I've gone to spiritual teachers, and I've always been an arguer, really heavy-duty arguer about, especially with gurus. I love to argue with gurus, and I like to be right all the time. I like to be right because it feels good. And so when I came here in the last 3 days, what I find amazing is when you started to talk like you did, which is kind of like, I felt anger. And for me, the miracle of what has happened here is to be able to relax when you're talking and have absolutely nothing to defend for her. Like, I would have defended for her. I felt that coming up, and I just relaxed in it. And I said, you know, well, she can take care of her own space, you know? All I have to do is relax here. And you can take care of your own space. And space takes care of itself. And everything is included. Your journey is included. Mine's included. Everything is included. Because when I came here, I was so distraught about going back to the U.S. And all that stuff.
Yeah.
And now George Bush is included in basic space, and that's fine. It's fine. And what I get from this teaching, and what I just get in that chair, is the fact that when I rest, it's all so perfect. And I've read about perfection, and I don't even know really what the word perfect means, but I know that feeling of ease of being able to sit here and let life, let all my perceptions be as they are, rather than, you know, trying to make anything different, makes me feel what she's talking about is that gentleness that I never get to feel about anything when I'm intellectualizing anything. There's no gentleness in my life. There's only things to defend. There's things I'm trying to understand. There's things I'm trying to do. You know, and there's just now, and all that stuff about, you know, just being, reading about, oh, be here now, be in the now. How do I be in the now when I'm being in the now? Oh yeah, now I'm not being in the now. And it's all that, you know, it's all that. Here's the point of view, and it's the elaboration that we learned about yesterday that happens, that creates this, confusion, which it too is included. It's also included, and that makes me feel so gentle with myself, like I've never felt before. And I feel this gratitude that isn't a gratitude of words or of having to say it. It's just because you know, because I am.
You are gratitude.
Yeah. I thank you for being part of my experience today of seeing that, you know, there's nothing to defend anymore in my life, you know. I can sit with that. And when I do come into defending, then I can include that in too, you know? It's just that there isn't anything that isn't included in my life, in my perception, in my awareness. And outside of that, when she talks about the basic space, what I'm feeling is that maybe I don't understand, I can't wrap my mind around it, but there's something that, I've tried to say this the first time I came here, here's the words, and it's that space in between. It's sometimes it's like, breathing in and out. What's that space between the breathing in and the breathing out? It's like in between that space that this stuff comes into me. And I don't know really what it is, but I know it comes through the words. The words are here and the words are here, and then the breath is here in the breath and the breath comes out. But in between that, where is that, you know? And that's what comes through as my reality of ease and comfort. And I'm really grateful. It's my dessert.
Simon?
I have two questions.
Sure.
Would it be fair to say that basic space is completely aware and intelligent? And also, would it be fair to say that the word God could be used to describe, like some people refer to basic space as God, we're talking about a similar sort of thing?
Yes, God could be synonymous with basic space, but it would be a God without qualities and characteristics, so it wouldn't be a God based on dualistic perceiving. When we speak about non-duality, we speak about that which includes and contains everything, and in which everything is a single expanse of equalness and evenness. So that means that everything that occurs in this space is originally pure. We'll use the word originally pure. And so if the term God is used to describe it, it would have to be a description of God that is like what I just described. So, you know, there are many descriptions of God, and we use the language we do in the Great Freedom Teaching so that it will speak to as many human beings as possible. Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
Brahman. This is the I'm not saying anything new here. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is exactly what has been said throughout time. The only distinction, this is the pinnacle teaching of all time that's been handed down from one generation of human beings to another. But in a few of those generations, there has come about an entirely new way of describing it, just so that it can be accessible to more people. And so here in the Great Freedom Teaching, we use language that almost all human beings find acceptable.
Am I allowed to speak? The only problem I had with your teaching was that you were saying basic space contains nothing. It's nothing there. He said the word that nobody wants to say was God. You want to call it pure, fine. That's my only point, is that there is that essence. That's it. From everything else, there is the basic space or whatever, or that is the basic space, or however you want to view it, but that is the source. Do you agree?
I suggest to you that you rely on your own direct experience of awareness and your own direct experience of yourself as the great totality, and then come back here and tell me about that. That's all. I don't debate. I'm not a philosopher. So
it doesn't make me feel good.
Well, then perhaps there's something from today that will strike a chord in you that will be unlike any chord that's ever been struck before, that will completely strip away everything that you've thought to be true about yourself and everything else. And then you can have the direct experience of what Vanamali Mataji stated, of the space that from which the banyan tree, the space from which everything that is appears.
And turns trees, leaves green, yes.
Well, you don't...
Trees are green because they're green. You don't
want
to accept it.
I think something. You don't want to accept it.
Please, please. Andy. No. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's yeah. Yes,
I'm black, you're white. That's how you can recognize white. Can you get it?
Empty space.
Yeah. When you rely on your own direct experience of who you are, you will understand what I've said to you today. Yeah. You know, when I woke up, so to speak, the first thing I wanted to do was be an evangelist. You know, I wanted to run around and tell everybody about it. Oh, guess what? Guess what? There's this incredible reality of being human. You too must experience this. But I realized there was a very simple approach to this matter, and that is that I didn't have to say anything to anyone. I could just sit somewhere, and those who wanted to could come. And if people want to hear what is shared here and have the direct realization of that, that's fine. And if they don't, that's fine too. It's the easy way, natural rest. This is something too, this term natural rest, resting naturally, is threaded through the Rig Veda, the Upanishads, through all of Vedanta, through the Tantras and Sutras of Buddhism. It's this resting is basic, holy positive basic space, or whatever you want to call it, is the essence of everything and nothing else. We'll sit quietly for a few minutes before we end.